certainly, I think you could tell by the lack of applause there wasn't. He got a very lukewarm welcome, but then the messenger bearing bad news frequently. Was there anything in his speech that really surprised you, or was there anything that maybe was a curveball, so to speak?
No, there really wasn't a lot that surprised me. I was encouraged by the fact that the governor obviously recognizes we have serious, serious budget constraints, and that, in my opinion, he laid out a framework. Whether or not we adhere to that framework or we deviate somewhat remains to be seen. But by identifying Medicaid and the challenge that it has in our budget, and also the fact that he mentioned he would like to see all interested parties at the table for a pension reform discussion. I was encouraged by that. And my hope is that we can all work together as four caucuses, working together with the administration to move the changes forward.
He did say that he wanted to basically cut out of the next budget about $2.7 billion, with a B, excuse me, in Medicaid's spending. I don't know if that's relative to this year or to projections or just what that figure is based upon. How realistic do you think that is, though?
Well, there is somewhere between $1 billion and $1.5 billion in eligibility changes, reforms we made last year. If the governor were to request those waivers of the federal government, that would be a great place to start, because those changes passed both the House and the Senate, and the governor signed those reforms. And so all we need now is for him to act and request the waivers of the federal government to implement those changes to our eligibility. So that's going to be a start. But it's not far enough. We have to continue. Currently, we have, he was right when he said one in two children born in the state of Illinois are on Medicaid. Well, not only is that the case, but we have a family of four making almost $70,000, $69,000 and some change, and they are eligible for our family care program. While all of the states around us, their eligibility is somewhere between $30,000 and $40,000. So I think that we have some changes that are there, some reforms that we could request the waivers for. And going forward, I think that we can continue to identify areas to weed out fraud and certainly narrow our eligibility.
Now, when it comes to the – I was speaking with your colleague from the area, Senator Sullivan, a little bit ago,
mm-hmm.
and he was talking about the same thing, that the reform bill had passed something like a year ago. And
yes.
Is that still in law, or would the federal government did not essentially grant those waivers, or would the General Assembly have to pass another version, or would that still be the law and it's just a matter of getting the federal government to accept and allow those waivers?
It would still be the law because the governor did sign it into law. It's just a matter of requesting the waivers from the federal government. And we're not forging new ground here. Many of the states have not only requested those waivers, they've been granted those waivers. It's my understanding there's over 1,400 waivers that have been requested and passed. So it's not a new thing that we're asking for here. It's just that, you know, under the Blagojevich administration, we had eligibility programs that had no caps. It was Katie bar the door, and we need to rein a lot of those in and be sure that we can protect that program for the people that it was intended to help and those that really need that help.
What about he names basically four general areas, talking about obvious eligibility, which you're kind of talking about with the reform bill that was passed, but also in cutting payments to providers. Now, is that a healthy, no pun intended, measure? Because if you cut the reimbursement too much, a lot of doctors and clinics will simply say, we're not going to bother with it.
Absolutely. There are cuts that we have done over the recent years to – hospitals and physicians, that these folks just can't continue to provide the services with the kind of reimbursement rate that we have. Many of them have said, you know what, I can provide the service if I can be guaranteed a payment schedule. But we are not guaranteeing any kind of a payment schedule. I mean, our hospitals and our physicians, they have no idea when their next payment is coming from the state of Illinois, and most of them have not received any in this fiscal year. So, you know, as one of my administrators said, well, a 17% cut out of nothing doesn't hurt so bad. So I think that the most important aspect there is let's get them on a payment schedule that we can adhere to.
What about two cutting services? And I don't know, the governor did not have specifics here, but I don't know if it might be like cutting, I don't know, maybe eyeglasses or dental care or whatever, you know, some of the things, Medicaid. Are there any specific services that might be targeted for elimination just to...
There may be. Frankly, Illinois has a real Cadillac program when it comes to our Medicaid coverage. We provide services. For instance, we provide chiropractic services to our Medicaid recipients. So there are, we provide eyeglasses, and it's my understanding that there are multiple payers allowed on an annual basis. So there are some things that I think that we could change in many of the programs that we do offer and we, in fact, administer to a lot of our folks.
Now, in terms of the pension system, because I remember meeting you at one of the seminars that the teacher retirement system in the state held mm-hmm. here in Macomb, and you know the governor specifically made the remark, as I recall it, that he said that 3/4 of the pension cost in the state is for employees who are not on the state payroll, which implies that certainly one could read into that he's wanting to push some of that burden on down more to local bodies of government, particularly school districts, I suppose county and city as well. And, you know, school administrators certainly that I've talked to are just scared to death of that. Do you think that that's part of the solution, though?
Well, I think that in Governor Quinn's mind, Speaker Madigan's mind, and Senate President Cullerton's mind, that's a real possibility. And, you know, certainly they would have enough members that if they pushed a vote on that, they could certainly do that. But I think that it's important that we understand that this is a huge burden to put on our school districts, and we're not giving them the transportation money that they need to get the students to the classroom, and then to say that we want to put more money into the classroom, well, for God's sakes, we got to get them there first. And so if we're going to underfund the transportation, but we say we're going to add more money to the classroom, but in fact we put an added burden of those pension costs with no plan right now, you know, is it going to be phased in? Are you going to allow the communities to raise the property taxes over the PTEL limit? There's a whole lot of questions that come along with that. So it's not as easy as the governor and the speaker and the Senate president would lead us to believe.
Now, in an earlier discussion we had about 3 weeks ago, we were talking about the State of the State address, and the governor at that time mentioned the monetary assistance program and wanting to increase funding. And he really hit that theme again along with some other increases in certain very limited education areas. But it sounds like he essentially wanted to double the number of students who are on the MAP program. And you said 3 weeks ago that if the money was there, and that's the qualifier, of course, but do you think the money would be there to expand MAP?
You know, again, we cut MAP funding last year in our higher education appropriation. Now, I want to clarify that the MAP funding that we cut was the funding that would go to the students at the for-profit proprietary schools. So those are schools, and I'm not going to mention names, but they are schools that are for profit and they are proprietary schools. So we tried to cut that last year. The governor had already awarded the funds, so we had to go forward with it. But you know, if our choice is to put money into community colleges, we put more money into community colleges this year, and I'm certain that we would like to do at least flat funding, if not add more funding to that program, and to our universities. Quite frankly, that money, it needs to go into many of those lines, and we can't, if we can't afford the MAP funding, we can't afford the MAP funding, and we need to move forward with what we're doing.
Is your district going to be hit at all by closures? In talking with Senator Sullivan, it didn't sound like his Senate district, which, of course, is slightly larger than certainly your House district, was going to get hit that hard. Do you know of any closures that are going to be right in your House district?
We will have a number of our DHS facilities. I think maybe as many as six of our DHS facilities will be combined. They should be fairly doable, such as Monmouth combining with Galesburg, Rushville combining with Beardstown, those types of things. The only closure that I am aware of at this point in time is the CMS garage in Monmouth that will be combining with Galesburg.
Is there anything you'd like to add, Representative?
I think we're good.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate
it. You're welcome.
Take care.
Thanks, Jim. Bye-bye.
Bye.